All right, so imagine a piece of old parchment slowly unfolding, and on it, the whole story of the American Revolution is laid out like a map. That's the image I keep coming back to when thinking about how to make this click for someone studying these 15 vocabulary terms.
That's a great frame. And the map has to start somewhere, right? Before there are battles or declarations, there's a power dynamic. A king across an ocean, making decisions for people who have zero say in those decisions.
So that's where the word despot comes in. A despot is a powerful, cruel ruler, someone who governs through force rather than consent. And the key idea here is that colonists didn't always see King George III that way.
Right. That shift is crucial. Early on, many colonists still considered themselves English subjects. They weren't demanding independence. They were claiming the rights of English people. The despot label came later, after years of accumulated grievances.
So what actually pushed them toward that label? What were the specific indignities that built up?
Think of it as a slow accumulation. After the French and Indian War, which ran from 1754 to 1763, Britain needed money badly. So Parliament started taxing the colonies directly, the Sugar Act in 1764, the Stamp Act in 1765, the Townshend Acts in 1767.
And the colonists had no voice in any of that.
None. No elected representatives in Parliament. That's where the phrase, taxation without representation, comes from. It wasn't just about money, it was about dignity. Being governed by rules you had no hand in making is itself a kind of indignity.
So indignities isn't just a dramatic word, it's describing something real and daily. Soldiers in your home, taxes on your newspaper, your mail, your legal documents.
Exactly. The Stamp Act hit printed materials, specifically. Newspapers, legal papers, even playing cards. And then, after the Boston Tea Party in 1773, Parliament passed what colonists called the Intolerable Acts. Boston's port was closed. Massachusetts was placed under tighter British control. That's not abstract policy. That's your livelihood, your community, shut down.
Right, but how does a community go from feeling humiliated to actually organizing a fighting force? That's a big leap.
It is, and that's where the militia comes in. A militia isn't a professional army. It's ordinary citizens who take up arms together. Farmers, tradespeople, shopkeepers. They already had local structures, local committees. After the Intolerable Acts, the Continental Congress in 1774 even set up systems to enforce boycotts through those local networks.
So the infrastructure for resistance was already there before the shooting started?
Largely, yes. And within that militia structure, there was a specific group, the Minutemen. Their whole role was readiness. They could be called up at a moment's notice, which is where the name comes from. Not a separate army, but a rapid response layer inside the broader colonial fighting force.
Mm-hmm. So on our visual map, you'd have the despot at the top, the king, with arrows pointing down showing control, then indignities spreading outward through colonial life, and then the militia and Minutemen forming as a response at the bottom.
That's the arc. And what's worth noting is that the Declaration of Independence later formalized exactly this list of grievances. Denial of jury trials, military abuses, suspension of colonial legislatures. The document accused the king of a pattern of injuries and usurpations aimed at establishing, quote, absolute tyranny.
Wait, so the declaration wasn't just announcing independence, it was also building a legal case against a despot.
Precisely. It was a documented argument. And for our listener working through these vocabulary terms, that connection matters. Despot and indignities aren't just definitions to memorize. They're the cause and effect engine that drives the whole story forward.
That's a really useful way to hold it together. The proclamation line of 1763 is another one worth flagging. Britain tried to restrict colonial settlement west of the Appalachians after the war, which angered colonists and land speculators alike. More control, more friction.
Good addition. Every one of those policies added another layer. And as the arrows on our map move forward, we start to see the colonial population splitting. Not everyone responded the same way to all this pressure. Some grabbed muskets, some stayed loyal to the crown, and some sat right in the middle, genuinely unsure.
Which is exactly where we're headed next, the neighbors who stayed loyal and the ones stuck right in the middle of it all.
That social divide is one of the most underappreciated parts of the revolution. The takeaway from today, though, is that the road to independence started with something very human. The feeling of being treated as less than equal by a distant power that called itself your government.